Hi, welcome to the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm Mike Holland. I'm the Assistant Managing Editor here, and welcome to another episode. I'd like to introduce our guest, Rob Armstrong.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. My name's Rob Armstrong. I'm the CEO of Vertex Biopharma. We're a biotech clinical stage company working pretty much in autoimmune diseases specifically. Looking at We ran a trial that read out early this year in psoriasis, but we're focused on moving into other autoimmune diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis, atopic dermatitis, and others.
And I'm sure this is a it's a landscape that's always evolving, but I'm sure the last couple of years have been a little more there's been a little more change than usual. So I was wondering first if you could just describe the evolving landscape of R&D in this area.
Well, I think there's been a huge number of successes, and you see those coming out pretty much in real time. If originally, we started with oral drugs way back there 50 years ago that were not very selective. They actually had many, many side effects. But really, with the advent of protein therapeutics, it really changed the whole landscape. And when people started going after antibodies that were specific to particular cytokines that were more involved in certain diseases, you saw a really tremendous improvement in the health of patients that had been treated with these medicines. I think a trend more recently has been to take some of these validated mechanisms and actually convert them from protein therapeutics to easier to dose oral drugs, for instance. And I think what you're seeing there is mechanisms like IL-17, IL-23 with respect to biologics that are quite successful. And now you see some really interesting oral versions of that that I think will continue to evolve across all the biologics that are out there. These are validated mechanisms and I think appropriate time to start targeting them with small molecules.
And at Artax, you chose psoriasis as your initial indication, correct?
We did. We had a pretty short, limited safety data of 4 weeks. So this was a first-in-man, first-in-class mechanism we're working on. It's a mechanism called NCK. It's an adaptor protein, and we were really concerned about whether it had any effect at all on human therapeutics. We had a very strong package in preclinical, both in vitro as well as in vivo animal models, but I think as many of us in this industry have seen over and over again and experienced, the translational medicine of some of these animal models really doesn't translate very well into human therapeutics. So psoriasis we chose because in 4 weeks, it's one of the few autoimmune diseases where you can actually look at biomarkers, even clinical endpoints, and start to see some changes. And you see this in pretty much all the drugs that have been approved. Within 4 weeks, you see biomarker movement. Typically, you start to see some movement in clinical endpoints, depending on the mechanism. Some mechanisms peak in 6 months, some mechanisms peak in 4 to 8 weeks. So we didn't know where this fit. We didn't know if it was going to be reflective of the human therapeutic. So we decided to go after psoriasis. And sure enough, when we turned the card over, we found that we both had clinical evidence that this mechanism is relevant to psoriasis, the autoimmune disease psoriasis, but also that the biomarkers were all appropriately moving in the right direction that indicates that this is a biologically active molecule.
And would you say you've noticed a trend in the industry shifting from biologics towards oral treatments?
Well, it's a trend, but I don't think you're going to replace all the biologics that are out there. But there's some pretty interesting examples out there. One that I'll mention is the oral IL-23 drug that's being developed right now by J&J, which really shows spectacular clinical endpoints that are really hard to match by a lot of the biologics. So I think in some cases that'll be the outcome, but the biologics are here to stay. They're excellent. They work really well. There's very much like any disease area, including oncology, what you find people working on is the gap that isn't served by those existing drugs. right? So no drug works on 100% of the time on 100% of the people. And therefore, what you see companies developing right now is going after these smaller patient populations that are either unserved or underserved or can no longer tolerate some of the existing drugs that really are looking for new solutions to their disease.
And so you would say that it's more of like a trend towards like developing like small molecules to complement existing therapies, correct?
Yeah, I think for some areas that's the case, but again, I don't think I think the biologics work extremely well in many, many diseases. But once again, I mean, there's still a large list of undermet or unmet medical need for not only certain autoimmune diseases, but even, as I indicated, within autoimmune diseases. You know, areas like RA, which has some excellent medications out there in the market, there's still a very large percentage of patients that are really their disease is not addressed at this point. So you see a lot of new mechanisms that people are working on. An example, of course, is ours. We're working on a new mechanism that we believe is applicable to some of these other diseases. And so we're going down that path at this point. But I think there are also a lot of interesting breakthroughs that are occurring right now with new mechanisms, or even flipping the coin on, for instance, the PD-1 agonist versus antagonist. I mean, I think there's some really interesting biology that's ongoing that I think will be relevant to patients. And I look forward to seeing the results, clinical results of some of those studies.
And I'm moving over more towards the leadership side of your job. What's your approach to building a high-performing team?
Well, I think a critical component of that is to make sure that the entire team is empowered to really speak up and be creative and be aggressive in terms of making sure that their point of view is actually understood, and then tolerating that and encouraging that particular environment for all the team members. So I think I used to tell folks when I worked in big pharma that, you know, just walk around acting like you're the CEO until somebody hits you on the side of the head. And really what I was trying to say there is that I saw in big companies, I think there's a challenge of what I call self-incarceration. What I mean by that is that this is my role, these are the limits of my role, therefore this is where I'm going to play. And so many times, so many folks have so much talent beyond that. And you want to encourage the ability for people to be working outside of the area as well as inside the area. And I think a high functioning team is one where everybody's questioning everybody else all the time, coming up with ideas, and sometimes those ideas coming from not the domain experts are actually some of the best ideas that the team can put together. So if you encourage that kind of dialogue internally, I think you have a relaxed, so to speak, you know, a relaxed, well functioning and high quality team.
And it sounds like a big part of that success comes from bringing like people from different disciplines together and making sure they all have the ability to contribute, correct?
It's that, and also recognizing that, you know, people have different ways of actually communicating their thoughts. You know, sometimes you have folks on a team that think very quickly on their feet, and they'll react instantly to whatever issue comes up. And there are other team members that actually need an overnight or a week to think it through and think all the possibilities, maybe go look up some things. And you got to be able to balance both of those, right? So you can't ignore those that actually need to ruminate a little bit. And oftentimes, their ideas many times are just as good as the people that can be very quick on their feet. So what I mean by that is not only diversity of domain expertise, but diversity of recognizing that you got to really encourage and recognize how some of the individuals in your team actually need to communicate and need to think about how they're going to actually work through problems that either takes a little bit more time for some folks than others.
Awesome. So that actually covers all the questions I had. Was there anything you'd like to add?
Is this still part of the interview?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, a couple of things, right? Obviously, you on the, you know, interviewing many folks and seeing trends yourself as you have these kind of conversations. What's the mood out there, given some of the substantial changes that are occurring at NIH on one level, at the FDA at another level, at importation of drugs, drug pricing, et cetera, et cetera? So give me a sense of what that looks like.
There's a it's been hard to tell. I feel like a lot of people are have been very careful with what they're saying and how they're saying it. There's definitely a lot of uncertainty, and I think especially in the area of how I think the biggest question is how is this going to impact innovation? Because I think when it comes down to it, with drug prices, like the industry will always figure that out. Like there's always ways to reduce drug prices without destroying your bottom line. But one of the big things is that the US has always been very friendly to innovation, especially the development of like small molecules in various spaces, especially oncology. And they don't really know how that's going to be impacted yet. And the biggest question is there's other like countries right now that are looking to build up their pharmaceutical industries, and are they going to look at this as an opportunity? And then, what disease areas are they going to be interested in? Because it won't necessarily be the same as the US. So right now, no one really knows. And also, of course, like with everything coming out of like NIH, FDA, and even the administration itself, it seems to be kind of in flux. So people are really just waiting to see, well, what are they even going to have to deal with like a year from now? Is that true to your experience?
Well, I mean, I mean, I came out of academia, and I had NIH grants, NSF grants, many other grants, and I can't imagine right now the uncertainty in some of those groups and universities on where things are going. How do you plan for the future? You're supporting a bunch of postdocs and graduate students. How is that going to play out? I mean, to me, I feel for them. I mean, I been there, done that, and it was hard enough when things were actually normal, to get funded. So the idea of facing the environment right now, I just it looks pretty daunting. So in that sense, I think it's a little bit discouraging, to see that, because as you pointed out, not only do we do great innovative work in the U.S., but we also attract scientists and physicians from all over the world. And when I sit back and think about, my two of my three advisors were foreign born. I worked probably with as many foreign born scientists as I did with U.S. born scientists. So I mean, science really does extremely well when you bring different points of view, different educational backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. And so I really hope this continues, because this is a it's a little bit discouraging right now.
Well, I guess we'll end on a bit of a down note there, but I think the thing I'm hearing from the industry is that anyone who gets involved in the pharmaceutical industry knows they're getting involved in an industry that changes pretty rapidly, and like whatever happens, there's a lot of dedicated people, trying to make sure that like the research keeps going and innovation continues. So hopefully that gives you a bit more positivity. In your
No,
outlook.
look, I mean, the long term, I'm always positive. And when I again, it comes back to innovation. I mean, when I see some of the drugs that biotechs and pharmas are working on right now that haven't been in the clinic, right? They haven't launched yet, new mechanisms, better versions of existing drugs. Boy, you can only be anything but excited, because there's just so many unbelievably interesting opportunities, and continuing to address the needs of patients out there, that many of who still find themselves in a situation where they there's just nothing for them. And you see that in our oncology. I mean, specific tumors, can be treated different, much better than other tumors. So it's a little bit of I as always, there's always an opportunity to develop a new drug to address those populations.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a good place to end. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Mike.
Me too.
Yep, bye.